The more we say get out, stop, 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 the more it stays there. So like our subconscious to me is similar like an inner child. It just wants to be heard. You know, we all want to be seen, especially men. We all want to be seen. Our subconscious, that part of us wants to be seen. And what I've learned is like just acknowledging, hey, I've got a little bit of anxiety or this is happening. It's like, I see you. Or for example, if I get triggered, I want to eat food. I'm like, do I really? Am I really hungry? So I stop. I validate the feelings that I'm having, that part of me. Huh. And then it's like, hey, do I need that? So I have this inner dialogue, but by working through that and some of these little mindset games that I've, or mindset tools that I use, I'm learning that that emotion to want to eat or do whatever, or check out, actually goes away with a matter of 10 to 20 seconds when I just acknowledge it.
Welcome to another episode of the Deeper the Dough podcast. I am super excited to have Adam Nugent.
Did I say it right? Yeah, you said it right.
Hell yeah. All right. And Adam and I are just getting to know each other thanks to an amazing friend, Jesse, who came bearing some sweet gifts that I probably won't mention on this podcast yet. No, I'm just joking. Shout out to Jesse and the Cannabis School podcast. So Adam, welcome, man.
Yeah, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Can you give us, let's start with just a 2-3 minute background of yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've got kind of a wild story. I've had, major transformational experiences literally in every part of my life, which has kind of led me to this today. So in my body, you know, I've been on this big health journey and my understanding is you have as well. So yeah,
if nobody's looking at Adam, he's jacked. You can see his traps. He's looking great.
Yeah. So I didn't always look like this. So I peaked out close to 350 pounds. So I've lost over 125 pounds. So I've been transformation in that. I've had transformational experiences in my relationships, went through a divorce and then coming out of that, then to be able to experience love and intimacy at a whole nother level. And then here just recently here, you know, over the last 18 months, well, nearly 2 years, I built an 8-figure financial services wealth management firm. And long story short, had a number of different things happen to that and, you know, had a fund that we came in and had an audit by the SEC that came in and audited our firm, which is standard in that approach. And they took issue with some of the way our fund documents were set. And long story short, ended up losing my license. And, you know, had a several $1 million fine that was assessed against me. And, you know, having as a man, right, so much of our identity is tied to our companies and our worth is tied to that. And, you know, went through the darkest of darkest moments, nearly took my life last year, you know, as a result of it, not really understanding the gravity of really what had gone through. Uh-huh. And, you know, where I'm at today, kind of moving and coming through all of that is really, you know, who am I? What have I been through and what can I do and how can I help the world, you know, not only do what, you know, not only be their best selves, but also not go through what I went through. Mm-hmm. Right. And today my platform is called Burn Up. Okay. So Burn Up is a transformational men's coaching program really designed to help people level up their life. Cause I believe everything we want is on the other side of fear, on the other side of pain. And those real trying moments, as difficult as they are to be in that, that's where the magic happens is when you lean into fear and what scares you.
I hate that because it's so true. I feel like I'm going through that all the time. And that's, I mean, where we're at with business, it is overwhelming. It is crushing. And it sucks. And then other days is great.
Oh yeah.
But I would say the majority of the days for the last 6 months have just been like, oh, this is, does anybody know what they're doing? Cause I don't. So that's awesome that you're providing that support. It's needed.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I think especially like business owners or entrepreneurs, you know, there's this whole like, oh, I want to own my own business. I want to do this. I want to do that. I mean, until you've sat in the role of an owner or CEO, I mean, you don't know, right?
No.
There's the risk that you take. You're the last person to get paid. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? And the stress and the impact that you feel for so many people can be overwhelming sometimes, many times, actually. It sounds like you've been experiencing that here the last 6 months, right?
Oh, for sure. Thinking, oh, how many people are depending on me for a paycheck? And it's like, we went from 15 employees to like 150. I'm like, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But also, and I kind of had a realization just last week, it was actually really fun. My wife's family. And anyways, we all came to my house, got a babysitter, got rid of the kids, and we did some psychedelic. We had a really cool psychedelic experience together. And one of the realizations in that was because somebody else was like, oh, this person needs me. This person needs me. And somebody else commented this. No, nobody needs you. Like, let that go. Like, it's a little bit egotistic to think like, oh, I have to do this because all these people need me. Talking about employees, and that kind of clicked with me. I'm like, yeah, these people don't really need me. They survived before. They will survive after. I'm going to do my best to serve them, but they don't really need me. And that was something that I was able to at least momentarily kind of de-stress and separate myself.
And I love that you mentioned that, because a big part of my journey, and it's been a huge catalyst and a great tool, has been psychedelics and plant medicine. I'm a huge advocate. In fact, just prior to recording this, just had a weekend with ayahuasca. And
that scares me. Yeah. I've never done it. That scares me.
Well, we'll need to talk. In fact, I'm so passionate about the impact that has in people's lives. I mean, it truly is transformational. Mm-hmm. In fact, here coming up here later this spring, I'm actually hosting an ayahuasca retreat in Costa Rica.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. Amen. Let's do it. Like, it truly is.
As long as Jesse could be there.
Truly is life changing.
I get my ass kicked on psychedelics. they're amazing, and it has changed my life. As well as with my wife, both of us together. What got you started in it?
You know, honestly, I was going through, I was married at the time and, you know, not knowing what to do. I was spinning out of control, and it's like trying to do this, and I'm going to therapy, and I'm doing all these things. And someone talked about, you know, was introduced to something called 5-MeO or BUFO, which is really, you know, I mentioned ayahuasca earlier. Ayahuasca can be anywhere between a 4 and 5 up to a 12-hour experience. And BUFO, if you will, or 5-MeO is like a 5 or 6 hour ayahuasca journey in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Right. DMT is the psychedelic. It's a part of it. And the shaman that administered it. And it, at the time, you know, I was raised LDS at the time, and I'm like, I don't even know about any of this stuff. I never even drank at that time. Uh-huh. And
how long ago was this?
This was about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And she looked at me and she goes, "You're going to have 10 years of therapy in the next 20 minutes. And it scared the hell out of me. And she was right. And my experience in that was as if my heart was encapsulated in 6 inches of steel. Uh-huh. And what happened in that experience is it cracked open. And I got to feel something that I'd never felt before. But more importantly, what I felt was the lack of self-love mm-hmm. and self-acceptance, the intensity of it. It was so overwhelming. It was so intense. But that started me on my healing journey, frankly, as far as self-discovery and realizing that it's like, ultimately, psychedelics and plant medicine in general, I believe, is just a pathway back to yourself, mm-hmm. right? A self-acceptance. You mentioned earlier about, you know, not necessarily being responsible for people. I mean, I've had that complex to where, you know, I felt like a savior. I had to take care of everybody. And many of the reasons I ran into trouble with my last company was because I couldn't say no to anybody.
Yeah.
Right. And tied so much of my identity saying yes. And so, yeah. I am such an advocate for those when used in the right setting, and it's changed my life and will continue to be part of my life going forward.
That's awesome. So on this experience, this first psychedelic experience, and what a one to choose. Should started with like a little bit of mushrooms or something.
No, and honestly, yeah, it's no. I drink from a fire hose. Oh, definitely. And there's a place for all of it. And you know, you mentioned psychedelics, and you know, a common one I think is a really good place to start is with psilocybin or mushrooms, yep. right? It's and there's different varying degrees of it. There's been such this negative stigma against psychedelics, against plant medicine. And again, it's like anything, you can abuse anything, whether yep. it's drugs, alcohol,
energy drinks,
coffee. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just, and I believe that we're all addicted to something truly. I mean, and there's this idea that like, oh, I'm addicted. You know, you can get addicted to some of these things. It's not for the faint of heart. You're not into it. It's not like this. I mean, there's moments of it that are joyous and beautiful, but it's work.
Yeah.
And what it does more than anything is it faces yourself. I mean, you're facing yourself. It's you and you. And appeal, you know, psychedelics, specifically even ayahuasca, for me, what it does is it takes your subconscious, your conscious, and the divine, whatever you believe that is, as far as God's concerned, it puts everything in alignment and then pulls all the stories away. All the bullshit gets taken away.
That ego.
The ego is gone. And then it just speaks truth to you. And the truth hurts sometimes. And it can be painful. Painful.
So in this first experience with the... with your heart
yeah.
and the cement around or whatever yeah. you described it, it sounded like the healing doesn't happen in that 20 minutes. It just shows you what the wounds are.
It does.
And then you have to go do the work after.
100%.
Is that accurate?
Accurate. Yeah. Maybe even from your own experiences.
Oh yeah. They've been terrible.
Yeah.
So terrible experiences, but it just shows me what's there and what I have and what I'm lacking. And then I have to go figure it out.
Exactly. After. Right. And we call that the integration. So the integration that comes after you have this mind blowing or this eye opening experience. Yeah. That particular moment, what it did where I felt an immediate, result, if you will, was it slowed everything down for me. So I was married at the time and my wife was saying, "You said this, you said that." And it's like, I was going crazy. I'm like, I didn't say that. I didn't even know who I was. And what it did that first experience more than anything is it slowed everything down. Uh-huh. So all of a sudden I could step back and I'm like, oh, yep, I did say that. That's mine. That's not mine. But then I just got curious. I just want to know more about me. How deep can I go? What is there to learn? And it's become, you know, plant medicine and the different modalities and different timing for different things has become, is a tool that has just, it literally has changed my life. And I'm here today. I'm alive today because of it. I mean, it really saved my life in many ways.
And you have a type A personality, right?
Oh yeah.
Go, 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 go. And I think that's, I mean, it's beneficial to everybody, but that's where I think the high achievers of, I just want to hit this goal and I'm going to be happy when, or I'm going to take my foot off the pedal when XYZ happens and you hit it and you don't.
It doesn't
you just,
happen.
You just set the next goal and then you just set the next goal and set the next goal. What have you done either with plant medicine or outside of plant medicine to be able to enjoy the journey?
Yeah, I love that. So I, you know, in my wealth management firm, we dealt with a lot of high net worth guys that you just said something where it's like, when I get to the exit, then I'm going to be happy. I'm going to grind. My life is my business. Everything else gets put to the side. But it's like, when I finally get to that, but what happens is with a lot of, and I would say more often than not, is people, they don't know how, they're programmed that way. They don't even know what to do with themselves. So they have an exit, they get all this money. And in many cases, they're miserable. It leads to divorce. I mean, there's all these things that happen with that. And so seeing that with different people's lives, what I've found, and again, it's hard, especially when you've had trials or significant, we'll call them failures, setbacks like that I've had in my life. It's really hard to quote unquote, enjoy the journey, right? And I've spent so much time on myself. And one of the biggest things I do is I take time to meditate. My self-care routine is critical to me. It used to be like, maybe I'll work out. Maybe I'm not. I mean, taking care of myself the way I start my morning, it's being intentional and just finding love and grace through all of it. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, part of my message for people really is like the stuff that scares us, the stuff that we're afraid of, that we try to avoid. The fact of the matter is you lean more into it, those setbacks, the ability to enjoy the journey actually becomes much more enjoyable as you overcome that and you face your fears because it just instills a new level of confidence.
I like that. I'm trying to learn that myself. Last night, put my kids to bed. I got a 6-year-old and a 5-year-old that sleep in the same room. I come downstairs, not even a minute behind me. I hear the footsteps, you know, they're coming down and I had a bad dream. I was like, you didn't have a dream. You didn't even go to sleep yet. And my 6-year-old is telling me, you know, when I close my eyes, I don't have good thoughts and things like that. And rather than ignore them, my advice, Rena, who knows, I'm making this up as I go, right? But my advice is just recognize that those are thoughts. You don't, it's okay that you're seeing and that you're feeling those thoughts or the monsters or whatever it is. So I don't know if that's leaning into it, but it's also don't run from it. Anyways, I'm trying to integrate that. And it's also hard with a 6-year-old, but it's, look, this is you and those are thoughts and it's okay to have those thoughts. You don't need to run from them because she literally was doing this. She's like, I don't want these thoughts in my head. And that one, it hurt my soul. I was like, oh, that, you know, had a lot of empathy for that. But, you know, what do you say to a 6-year-old and how do you teach them to lean in, whether they're 6 or not, but what would be your advice?
No, great question. So I mentioned earlier, and I think you've been on your own health journey, haven't you? You've lost a considerable amount of weight, is what Jesse mentioned. So, you know, what, even today, if I get triggered or I get anxiety, the first thing I think of is food. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's this part of us, you know, we talk about conscious and the subconscious side of it. And to me, the food, the trigger is like, I want to fix it. I want temporary relief from this. And to me, you know, or if it's that negative thought, like your daughter was having, you know, these thoughts, get out of my head. That's really just our subconscious talking. And the more we say, get out, stop, the more it stays there. So like our subconscious to me is similar, like an inner child. It just wants to be heard. You know, we all want to be seen, especially men. We all want to be seen. Our subconscious, that part of us wants to be seen. And what I've learned is like just acknowledging, hey, I've got a little bit of anxiety or this is happening. It's like, I see you. Or for example, if I get triggered, I want to eat food. I'm like, do I really? Am I really hungry? So I stop. I validate the feelings that I'm having, that part of me. Uh-huh. And then it's like, hey, do I need that? So I have this inner dialogue, but by working through that and some of these little mindset tools that I use, I'm learning that that emotion to want to eat or do whatever, or check out, actually goes away with a matter of 10 to 20 seconds when I just acknowledge it. So like stop. All we're really doing is throwing fuel on it.
And you're acknowledging that it's a thought and it's emotion and it's real and it's there.
Exactly.
And all it takes is just that.
Just stop and feel. I had someone teach me this and I'm like, it's not that easy. And actually starting to implement in my life, I'm like, it's crazy. So we can get these thoughts. And again, based on however we're programmed or whatever we do to, you know, avoid whatever that happens to be, when you can just acknowledge it and sit in it for just a minute, because you have to feel it to heal it, right? And if you sit in it just for a minute, it goes away instantly. It's crazy. It really works.
I was just listening to a podcast with, it was Peter Attia and Andrew Huberman. And they're talking about meditation and Peter Attia is getting into it. And he said that he's walking in New York City and he put his head down. And usually when you do that, people kind of move out of your way. But this person kind of, they kind of made eye contact. He was on his phone and the guy bumped into him. And he said, I'm just going to see how long I can, I have about a 10 minute walk left. I'm going to see if I focus on the anger, how, if I can actually be angry for 10 minutes. He's like, it wasn't even 30 seconds. Like just acknowledging it and feeling it. Which is, anyways, it's a superpower that we all have that we just don't know how to use.
Well, for sure. And I think, again, we try to avoid that pain, anger, whatever happens to be. But that's the subconscious part of us that's functioning that way. If we consciously said, I'm going to ruin my day, like let's take, you know, again, my unhealthy eating habits for most of my life. If I don't consciously wake up and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to have a horrible day today and I'm going to self-sabotage all day long and I'm going to sit, eat. If I consciously think that way, I'm not going to do it. It's when the subconscious takes over. So yeah, it's just
autopilot.
It's autopilot. So it's disengaging from the autopilot. And we all get on autopilot for once in a while. But again, if we can acknowledge it and recognize it, the ability to get off autopilot gets easier and easier and easier. And then, I mean, ultimately what my goal is now, and for, you know, people that I'm working with, is to help people live a conscious life, right? Mm-hmm. Versus just being quote unquote on autopilot.
Yeah. Which, man, that's the goal.
Yeah.
How many times a day can you remind yourself what's important and what's not, and being mindful and being an observer? It's hard.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard. You mentioned that we're all addicted to something. I think for me, and maybe for most people, it's a distraction from your mind. Like I go to food if I'm feeling stress or anxiety, because it's like, oh, I could focus on food, or I'll go to something else. Maybe I'll go to alcohol, or I'll smoke, and then I'm noticing it's like, it doesn't really matter which thing I'm going to. It's just, I don't like the state I'm in and I want to distract my mind of whatever state I'm in.
But is it, I guess the question I have for you is, is it more of just like you're trying to focus on something else, or is it more of that it's providing temporary relief to take you away from what you're already thinking?
I think that's the latter. So whatever that, it's like, I want to change my mindset. So I'm going to go I just want more pleasure. I want more endorphins. Yeah. I want more dopamine. So I'm going to go to food this time. I mean, how many, just kind of looking at our lives, whether we're in the car or whether we're on a walk, like it's very uncommon to see somebody in the line of a grocery store or the bank that's just sitting there. Like they're on their phone or something. And it's hard to be by yourself when we do these psychedelic. So again, with my wife's family, a lot of it, and it was mushrooms. Some people were trying mushrooms for the first time. Some people were trying ketamine, both very light doses, cause we're kind of easing into it. And both times I was encouraging them, like there's a psychedelic experience to connect, which is amazing and it's beautiful, but there's a whole nother experience. You don't have to do anything other than put on headphones and go in a quiet room by yourself.
Oh yeah.
Nobody wanted to do that. And I'm like, no, go freaking do it. And the one person that did, he had the best experience. He had the worst experience. He said he died 10 times, but he came out of it like, because he had I'm going to connect with everybody. And then I'm going to go kind of go face my demons and see, again, it was bad, but it was amazing. But most people were avoiding that. Like they didn't want to go by themselves. And I think just on a day-to-day basis, just walking around, look at how many people are looking for distraction versus how many people are comfortable sitting with themselves.
Yeah. And you actually nailed it. If you look at the science, I mean, again, there's different belief patterns around this, but if you look at just the science of all of it, you mentioned dopamine, right? I mean, our brain gets quote unquote addicted, or gets used to this. So dopamine, I mean, there's such an emphasis. I mentioned addicted to everything. You know, there's so much emphasis or judgment around alcohol or drugs, but it's like, you mentioned a cell phone, right? A cell phone's an addiction. It could be Netflix. It could be porn. It could be food, sugar, whatever. It's whatever you're getting that dopamine hit. And my belief is that the detachment from that dopamine is what's so painful, or in our quote unquote sitting alone. So one of the easiest ways to transition, like for me, like when I was going through all the pain of, you know, losing my company, I was checking out on whatever. It was such a painful thing. I didn't want to deal with it. And so I was finding different things to numb out on. And then ultimately one of the biggest things that changed my life was cold water therapy. And so cold plunges, you know, I was in some kind, sometimes I was doing it 3 or 4 times a day, but there was I was in such a fight or flight, more of like a flight state of mind. Uh-huh. And I was craving, I just need dopamine. Just let the pain go. Yeah. And what I found is like with cold water therapy is you can get in the water, you get the same equivalent dopamine hit, if not more, right? My belief is that, you know, even cold water has the same hit as if someone's doing cocaine, you know, but there's no crash.
Yeah.
There's no crash to it. You can ride it out. So trying to find quote unquote healthy ways to replace the unhealthy ways of getting dopamine, I think, is one of the easiest transitions to help any of us get off any sort of an addiction. But to go cold turkey on whatever it is hard.
Yeah. I'll notice like when I enter stress mode or panic mode or anxiety mode, I can do some sort of meditation. And before I do a meditation, I'll usually do a breath work.
Yeah.
Like 3 minutes of heavy breathing, followed by a minute of holding my breath. Sometimes I'm pumping my arms or moving it till my lips get tingly, which is just something I could focus on.
Yeah.
And then I can kind of sit back, and it's hard to jump right into a meditation without doing something before.
100%.
I've also done hape, or I'll do hape with breath work, if you're familiar with that.
Oh, very familiar.
Which has been amazing, other than it's a little gross, but the ceremonial aspect of it, I really like. I did the ice bath this morning as well. And I keep mine at, there's always ice on the edges because I keep it at 33. And it's the same, like I can go get in the ice bath for the I guess dopamine hit, or I can go eat. The ice bath is a much better option. One thing that I've tried just a few times, just want to get your opinion, kind of sidetrack, but I think it's called Sananga.
Oh yeah. And I did Sananga this weekend.
I just bought some and I keep it in my refrigerator, and my wife's like, why do you do this? And I'm like, I've only done it twice by myself and then twice in like group settings. And I'm like, it's just another, and it's one ingredient. It's a root. Have you heard of it, Jesse? Okay. It's a root. And they mix it with water, but it's an acidic water from the Amazon. At least this is what the lady who sold it to me explained it. And you put a drop or two in your eyes and you blink a few times, it gets in your eyes and it burns like hell.
Oh yeah.
Like you're at least for me and anybody I've ever done it with, you're pouring tears. It's not like you're just, and it stings, but it gets you focused, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're just breathing and focusing. And it, again, what's happening in that? I don't know, but I'd rather do that than go eat a Twinkie.
Yeah.
So it's weird, the different addictions. And I like that we're going to get addicted and we're going to be relying on something kind of no matter what, or most people are. So may as well do things that are a little bit better for you. I don't know if this is good for me putting that stuff in my eyes, but.
Well, I think to me, it's like, again, people talk about all these spiritual benefits that come with it and all these insights. For me, that hasn't been the case. It stings like hell. But to me, and I've only done it a couple times, but to me, my takeaway from it is it's like, I'm doing something quote unquote hard.
Yeah.
And so there's a little bit of euphoria. I mean, that's the reason I love cold plunge, especially in the morning. Morning, there's snow outside. It's freezing. Like, I'm like, what am I doing? And I have to talk myself into it every single time. But what gets me in it is how I feel when I'm done. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think, again, being intentional and doing things that are quote unquote hard helps us like step into stuff like the day to day stuff. That's life doesn't feel so hard because we've started off our day or doing other things. Right. And again, I agree with you. It can be a distraction. It's a dopamine release. You know, I'd rather do Sananga than eat a Twinkie personally because of my own health journey. Other people might feel like, well, I'm not touching that. I'd rather eat a Twinkie. I mean, to each their own, right?
But it's so cool that these tools are out there. I've gone most of my life without realizing that there are these tools. And I'm super grateful to the people in my life that have helped introduce these things, including this beautiful man over there, Jesse.
Yeah.
So anyways, we've talked a lot about the psychedelics. Yeah. I'd love to jump in a little bit more on, I can't imagine going through like losing a company.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think every entrepreneur is always in the back of their mind. What if it doesn't work out? And you kind of go to worst case scenario. But if you don't mind, open up a little bit more on how did you get through that? What were the emotions involved and how the hell did you get through that? And if, as you're speaking to somebody else that may be in a similar situation.
Yeah. So I think, some of the biggest emotions around it, honestly, are shame and guilt. Right. And it's like, you know, one of my greatest fears, and I think we all have this to a degree, but one of my biggest fears is worried what other people would think. Right. And this was so public. So, you know, people lost money in this, in one of the funds that we were in. And so the people that I love and care about, I mean, there were a lot of, you know, let me burn my own house down, but it affected so many people. And so the pain and the effect that it had on so many people was excruciating. And as I said, you know, to the point where I nearly took my life over it. And I don't want to bring it back to the psychedelics, but they actually kept me going because some of my experiences, like, hey, and it was literally minute by minute, sometimes hour by hour to get through that. But thinking about my kids, thinking about other people. And what I started to do was I started to see other people that I viewed as quote unquote successful that had similar experiences, right? Yeah. I believe that all of us have you know, there's one thing to be very open and vocal about it. There's a lot of people that have failures in other parts of their life that are quiet about it. They don't talk about it, right? And uh-huh. And I think there's freedom in discussing it. I went public earlier. I mean, last year I actually went online to share my experience, and it scared the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. Petrified. Imagine investors coming at me and everything. And I was literally, I got hundreds of text messages, DMs, people like, thank you for sharing this, for vulnerability. But the most surprising thing that came out of it, which really led me into my coaching thing, is I had dozens of men reach out to me and say, wow, you saved my life today. Thanks for being brave. I don't feel alone. Right? Because I think there's this idea that like,
everybody else is doing good.
Everybody's perfect. No one else has any problems. But the truth is like, and again, people have different awards, accolades, different people make money. But I think what unites us all together, where we are more alike than not, are our struggles, our challenges, the things that we face. And we all have them, just different varying degrees. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we're open about it, the more freedom there is in that. So one of the key ways that I've been able to get through this and continue to navigate through this, and it's actually become fuel for me, is talking about it. Just like we're talking about on this podcast. I mean, if you were to ask me to have this conversation a year ago, I was like, hell no, like I'm not ready. There's too much shame and guilt around it. And not that I'm proud of that moment, but you know, my why today is like, hey, you can lose quote unquote everything, or you could have a marriage failure, whatever it happens to be, you can have failures in your life. And if you choose, you can use it as a fuel to elevate you to the next life. Hence Phoenix rising, right? It's, you know, from the ashes, you will rise. And I think our failures are really lessons.
Yeah.
Right. And how we, and what we do with that lesson is really ultimately, you know, what happens is what we do with it.
And if I heard you correctly earlier on, you're talking about part of this coaching group that you have is to help people avoid mistakes that you've had.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that. So there's, I don't know, how old are your kids?
I've got four boys. I've got 21, 19, 16, and 13.
Okay. You probably didn't see the latest Disney movie called Wish then.
I have not. Yeah.
A king goes through a lot of struggles, gets a lot of power, and then all of his village, when they turn 18 or whatever, they have their one wish, and they give it to the king, and then the king takes it from them. They forget about it.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's kind of the purpose of the movie. And at the end of the movie, it was like, no, we need our wishes. We need to have something to drive through. But from the king's perspective, he was protecting them. Like, I'm going to take away your desires, because what if you don't get your wish and you're going to live with that pain? So that kind of came to my mind here. Like we all want to help other people experience, you know, the good parts of life without experiencing the bad parts of life. But us ourselves, we have to experience those bad parts of life, you know? So I don't know. I'm kind of just spitting out how do you help other people based on your experiences while also understanding that they also have to go through their own
journeys. No, so it's a great journey. So here's the kind of the secret sauce to it. In some cases, the answer is not to avoid. So part of my role is to actually...
That's the answer. I've never known the answer to that question. Anyways, keep going.
So part of my role is to actually handhold them through the flames. I think one of my unique offerings and the role that I play is I know I've experienced it. Like I know I've been in the depths of hell in different areas of my life, right? I mean, take something as simple as common as divorce. You know, I used to give advice to clients about divorce, and I thought I was nailing it until I actually went through my own and I didn't know anything. So having experienced it, my advice and the consultations that I give people that is very different than it was previously. And you don't know that through experience. So ultimately, we want to avoid the major pitfalls. I mean, I don't think you need to lose a business to really kind of know it. But nevertheless, like, you know, you have to face it. It's the only way is through. And that's
providing the support rather than teaching them so much how to avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, again, there's lessons to avoid. Yeah. It's a little bit of both, but ultimately sometimes, again, take something as simple as fitness, right? And getting in shape. I mean, I was paying a coach once thousands of dollars a month. And literally the conversation was like, I mean, it seems silly now, but it's like, how do I get my gym bag ready in the morning? I mean, we're talking about just basic, simple stuff, right? But now it's such a part of who I am, but I had to go through that uncomfortable stage. Nobody could do it for me. Right. And I had to like, start working out, start eating healthy. And that transition period from the way I used to be to where I am today was a process. There's no other way to get to where I am today had I not gone through it.
Yep. I want to see some of your fat pictures.
Yeah, I'll show
we'll exchange
you.
Some fat pictures.
Oh, yeah. it's unrecognizable.
On my phone, it has like, you know, pictures always popping up.
Oh, yeah.
My kids will see it and they're like, that's fat daddy. That's chubby daddy.
Oh yeah, my kids send
it
like, to me.
It used to be a trampoline, Dad. What happened?
Oh yeah, my kids will send like, this is 3 years ago. This is 5 years ago. And they send like, and it's like, who is this guy? Yeah. We just laugh about it. And my youngest doesn't even remember that version of me, which is crazy. But
that is crazy. When did you start that
So right, honestly, probably about 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago.
Okay. I was going to see. Usually it's one of these pictures and it's just a huge fat picture of me. And my kids are like, what the heck? So anyways, that's awesome. So yeah, 5 years back.
Completely it's a process, right? And the more I get into it, and then I find there's all these ways you can biohack your body. I mean, at the end of the day, especially if I love it because you can't buy it.
Yeah.
You have to do the work. Like it's impossible otherwise. And so it's such a confidence boosting thing too. And the old pictures, the quote unquote fat pictures, like I love that guy. I'm so grateful for him. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm so grateful for the journey. I'm grateful for the stretch marks. I'm grateful for all my imperfections because it reminds me of how far I've come.
And it's all perspective where other people are like, oh, I want to get rid of these stretch marks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've learned to love that. And it's, you know, again, we talk about self-love. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't
like that a lot.
Yeah. I couldn't even look at the mirror and say, I love this guy. I did this coaching thing years ago where you had to do like, I am statements in the mirror. So you had to like say 20 things like, I am beautiful. I am this, I am that. And I couldn't even say them in the mirror. And I had an accountability partner and I kept making excuses. The truth was, it was too painful. I mm-hmm. couldn't say it. And then I got to the point where I can dance and I can say the things like I'm sexy, I'm beautiful, but it's a process of getting there and it takes time. And so I think our self-worth, again, how we view ourselves, how we see the person in the mirror is ultimately dictates how we're going to show up in life, right? We can
100%
in every aspect. And I don't care what anyone says, it will affect every part of your life. Even if, I mean, I was crushing it in my business, but I was miserable at home and I was miserable in my body and it was still affecting my business, even though I didn't think it was.
And that's why I think the psychedelics have the biggest role. It just opens you up.
Oh yeah.
It opens you up to show what's there. That's all the lack of self-love and self-care and self-acceptance that's deep inside our subconscious mind that is dictating how we live on a day-to-day basis, but we don't even know it's there. And psychedelics open that up. It's like, hey, this is there. You should probably address this because this is driving your life in the subconscious mind.
Yeah. And I think there's a great book. It's called Existential Kink. And it's about basically loving all sides of ourselves because we all have a shadow side. We all have a side we don't like. We have a side we try to like push aside. And when we can learn to like recognize it and love that version of ourselves and know that, oh, there you are. Right. And then again, being able to control between the subconscious and the conscious side of it, not let it take over, you mentioned earlier, the autopilot.
Yep.
When you can learn to control that, I mean, it is powerful, but it's not easy. I mean, it takes time to learn that. And I think the thing that's really important too, I tell people is like, you know, we're new year and new year's resolutions and so forth. And everybody wants, you know, here's my 20 things I want to do. And they try to do all 20 at once. And like more often than not, you're going to set yourself up to fail. And yep. Then you just go right back to where you were. So it's baby steps. The ripple effect's real. It's taking micro changes that then have this monster ripple effect in our life.
This is my homework. I love the stretch marks thing. So I'll look in the mirror and I'm looking good. You know, I'm down about 110 pounds and I'm getting abs, but on the bottom, I got all that extra skin of 110 pounds and I need to go look at it and I need to change my perspective. And I say, I'm grateful for that and all the things because there are 1,000 things that it taught me and I'm grateful that I'm healthy now.
Yeah.
So that's the next time I see my little flab on my belly, I'm going to think of that and I'm going to say thank you to Adam.
Yeah. Cause it's a reminder of how far you've come. Right.
Yes.
And everybody has imperfections. Right. And I could tell you like, oh, you look amazing. Your wife can tell you that, but you have to believe it. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks.
I need to accept that the loose skin on the bottom of my belly. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's
my homework. Yeah.
Adam, it's been amazing talking to you. I have one question I would love to end with.
Yeah, please.
What is the legacy that you want to leave behind? How do you want to be remembered?
I mean, that's a great question. I want that your failures don't define you. Our failures don't define us. Again, you can lose everything. You can have heartbreak. You can have heart failure. That those are actually pain, fear, failures are actually gifts that can help elevate us to the next, to wherever we want to go. And you can have the biggest failures. You can lose everything, but still have everything. It doesn't just be, your past doesn't dictate your future.
I love that. And I'm a big believer in that because I don't believe in free will. So
yeah,
that's another conversation.
Yeah, I love it.
Anyways, Adam, how do listeners connect with you?
Yeah, they can follow me on Instagram. It's Adam Nugent is where I post most of my stuff. Or on Facebook. Yeah, just look up my name, just no space, Adam Nugent. And yeah, just sharing daily content and helping all of us to help elevate our lives. And I'm just sharing my story.
Okay, I love it. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.